And I've had my experiences within the paranormal, ufology and cryptozoology. And a lot of those experiences have focused my attention on the phenomena which is addressed in the Deceptions of Gods and Men. So really this is a culmination. And looking back over the other publications that I had written, such as In the Midst of Gods and Searching the She and the Banshee and things like that, I can see that direction was already engaged back then, but I didn't see it. It's only whenever I go back and review the books and I can see, wait a minute, there's a turn that I never saw at the time. Which ultimately was to focus and bring out the present book. So it's really crazy how the world and the things in it can guide us. I'm always one that let's go with the conversation takes us.
Okay.
And
I love that.
We'll wing it.
Okay, I love that. I love that. That's so awesome. Okay, so here we are. Today is a wonderful day. We're gonna start, Barry. I am Great. So excited to welcome my guest, Barry Fitzgerald, and I have his brand new book right here, which is called The Deception of Gods and Men. Okay, so the very first time I heard of this title, I was just drawn into this book title, Barry. Okay, and it's actually, I really love the cover art too. And I love that it says the price of power has never been so great. And I was listening last night on, I've been listening to Kindle, so I have it on Kindle.
Yes.
I have it on Reel. I have the Reel one. And then I have it also on Audible. So I was listening on Audible.
Oh, yes.
And I was listening. And I really love just the whole intro, too, about talking about your wives and, just how, everybody was a part of this and the art, the artist of it. So, Barry, can you tell us a little bit about yourself first before we go into your brand new book?
Sure. I've been involved in researching the paranormal as a whole for over 30 years. And from my standpoint, it has predominantly been the paranormal. And over the last 12 years, there's been a move to look at the greater fringe research fields, ufology, cryptozoology, and more outside. And the book itself, The Deceptions of Gods and Men, was designed to look at a fine thread that I could identify that weaved its way through all of the fringe research fields. And a common factor that seemed to be glaringly obvious from my standpoint. I wanted to explore that further. I was halfway through the book when Brian Allen asked if we could join. And I said, absolutely, Brian, because Brian has a long history as well, based in Scotland, within the paranormal. And the both of us got together and knuckled our heads down and we went for it, all guns blazing. And it has been a remarkable experience. Do I think that the book, or should I say, do I think that there were things that didn't want the book to come out. It would seem so, because even when we were writing the book, there was interference from through technology that kept setting us back continually. And it was infuriating when the manuscript would be sent via email to Scotland and vice versa, and everything was all over the place. Things that we had changed were changed back again, and everything was wrong. It really got crazy. It's no wonder I was losing my hair. We finally made it, and I have to say that you mentioned the audiobook there. I got a copy of the audiobook myself, and because I wanted to hear it, so we started on a long drive to the north, and my wife and I started listening to it, and I completely forgot. With being a writer, you see, I should point out that as soon as the book's written, it's on paper, it's out of here, it's on paper, and then I forget what's on the paper because I'm already working on the next project. So my mind is focused on the next thing that's coming. And I'm listening and I get lost in the audiobook, just daydreaming as I'm driving, thinking, oh, that's good. Oh, whoever wrote that, that's very good. And then I catch myself on thinking, wait a minute, I wrote that. Oh dear, the mind of an insane person, I suppose. So I've had a long history within the world of the paranormal, and I've had my experiences within the paranormal, ufology and cryptozoology, and a lot of those experiences have focused my attention on the phenomena which is addressed in The Deceptions of Gods and Men. So really, this is a culmination. And, you know, looking back over the other publications that I had written, such as In the Midst of Gods and Searching the She and the Banshee and things like that, I can see that direction was already engaged back then, but I didn't see it. It's only whenever I go back and review the books and I can see, wait a minute, there's a turn that I never saw at the time, which ultimately was to focus and bring out the present book. So it's really crazy how the world and the things in it can guide us in certain ways.
Yeah, because I can think of my life too, like especially the last 7 years here in this haunted location, which I wish you could come here. But, it was a winding path already, and it was, the signs were already there leading you to the moment in time. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, Barry, that what you wrote in that book is literally, it's almost like on a parallel with what I've been looking for. I've been looking and feeling the same way and wondering the same questions and searching for the same similar answers, but you have it like so incredibly detailed with some incredible things. And I want to say that one of the things that got me right off the bat was the very first thing you wrote, and I literally was in it. Like, I was so in it. I'm going to go to that little spot really quick, because it was the first page of the first chapter. When you, and let me just say, I love like where you live, and I love all of, you know, that world of your countries, and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm always, you know, I feel like I'm probably lived there in another life. But in 1692, Reverend Robert Kirk wrote a manuscript, a bilingual Scottish, and I want to say a Scottish minister from Aberfoyle. And I just, a village located near Stirling in central Scotland. And you know what's interesting is my friend Kev Dave Baker, you say that this is in near Glasgow. Mm-hmm. It's right by Glasgow, and that's where Kev Dave Baker lives, you know. And that's so correct. Yeah. I hope you had the opportunity to know him or meet him or hear of him. He was so wonderful. But right from the get-go, that story took me right into your world.
Yeah,
I was running around the house, like trying to get my son to look. Look. never stopped. Every single chapter is great. And then it was weird. When I started to listen to the actual Audible again, and I really liked the guy's voice. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's wonderful with pronouncing all the words and just saying everything just right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I ended up I just listened to it from the beginning, you know, instead of like going into the halfway point where I was reading. I mean, that's how much I never really do this with books. So I got to say, this is gotten to me. So can I ask about, do you, because you live in almost like a place where the history of ghosts and paranormal, I mean, it's just embedded in the wood and the nature there.
Yeah.
Do you think that, is that what kind of got you into wanting to be an investigator? Because you're like one of the top men, and you've got integrity, and you just everything. What do you think pulled you into that? I'm sure you know.
Well, I have to say that I often wondered about that myself. Growing up in a haunted house, you know, had part to play in that as a child, but I don't think it was all of that. And especially delving into the myths and legends of Ireland of the last 12 years, it really intrinsically got me deep under the skin of this land and into the elements that still exist here.
Yeah.
And I had some interaction with some of those old gods, and some of them do not want to be annoyed. And those encounters, of course, led me to wonder, well, who am I? Where does this meat suit come from? So I went through a DNA test to see, well, where do I actually come from? And it turned out that I was over 50% Celt. And I thought, well, maybe that's a reason why I'm here. And then there's 26% was Scandinavian. And I thought, wow. That's really strange. And the part of me was Greek. So I've got all those fundamental cornerstones that really placed me here and now for that purpose. And I understand that. And it was exceptionally powerful to really to get that this is here now on the very land that I'm meant to be on, exploring what I'm doing. It really brought it home for me, and very, very powerful stuff.
Wow.
So that's I suspect where I come from within it. And being Celt, of course, we're never too far away from that other realm. And maybe some of the listeners may not know, but what we conceive today as Halloween, which we call in the island here Samhain, it originated here. Halloween originated on this island, and we still have celebrations in which we will take flaming torches, and the community will meet down in County Meath on Halloween night, and we will take flaming torches up the avenue and walk that pretty quietly. It's a very solemn experience, and we enter this huge big ring fort style in the middle of the field at the top of the hill, and the community is split into two, and one side will reverberate this what they've been instructed to sing, harmonize almost, and the other side will then mimic. So you've got this wave and roll that happens during Samhain, And there's a fire in the middle, and you're calling in your ancestors, the people who have passed during that year. And this flow and eddy, really, 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 it's a magical, magical experience. But by no means is it the trick or treat version that happens in the United States. This is very, very different indeed. But such an experience. It is just absolutely awe-inspiring. I don't even have words to try and explain how you feel during that particular process. And then when it's over, we will have tea and sandwiches and some biscuits, and then off we go.
That's it. Magical. Oh my gosh, that's completely different from our Halloweens here. Yeah, I didn't really know that the whole Halloween thing started. So it's amazing to know it started there.
It did. And, we also have celebrations as well that are older than Halloween. And because Halloween primarily was definitely, something that rolled in with the Celts around 500 BC. But when we're looking at the likes of the summer solstice, that's thousands of years before. We're looking at the solstice now, the celebration here, which predates the Great Pyramids of Giza. And we have structures here that we can enter and on the solstice and watch and be part of when the sun enters the ancient chambers and moves slowly around the walls, because that's the time when we are to commune with those beyond. And so we have those experiences, and we don't have security guards telling us, no, you can't do this, you can't do that. We have access to these chambers 24/7, 365 days a year. And we're not robbed of that experience. It's been absolutely phenomenal, because that in itself has led to the next book, which is the Fruit of the Gods, which looks at what our ancestors were doing, how they were doing it, and what they were also consuming to help them commune with the gods. Because when you take this, which I've already identified, when you take this specific fruit at that time, which falls on the summer solstice, it raises your immune system, your circulatory system, and it really gives the body this jolt. And I suspect the reasons for that in itself is because what was coming through the void, from the void, didn't want to speak to someone who was stupid. They wanted someone smart. So you were already primed with this, consuming this particular type of fruit, which helped really lift the body, soul, and spirit as a one unit, to stand and commune with what was coming through.
Wow, because it's raise our vibrational like that.
Oh yes, and this fruit does that, all right.
Oh my gosh, and then that's amazing. So yeah, here we have, we have chains. We can't go into a lot of these places. I was going to say, like, the place that, so when I got here, I felt the second I drove into the property to meet, I was just dating Joe, my husband. And as I drove in, I'm like, I've been here before. I know this place. It just felt like home. And so right in the second I got to this property, it was like I knew that I was supposed to be here and do something. So came to where it was always getting hit bad, like things were kept happening for this 6 years that was so horrible, like even trying to destroy me. But I always knew that there was something powerful here that we were supposed to do, and luckily I feel like we have come on to the other side and we are helping. I'm actually able to do this show and I'm feeling good. If you can, what do you say about a place if it was cursed land and then broke that spell, or you were able to help get the curse out? What do you think happens, or why do you think that happens, that a certain person is guided to that area?
It can be tricky, because there are some occasions when you can't break it. And even here in Ireland, we can see that our Neolithic history, 5,000 years ago, we can see that there were parts of the land that even they stayed away from. And I'm aware as well in over in the East Coast of America that there were places there that the Native Americans also stayed away from. They traversed through, but they never set up camp there. They kept going. Even today, some of those locations, I'll give you an example here in Ireland, that the entities there will murder the dogs. They'll target the dogs first. The reason for that is because the dogs themselves have a sharper sense of them being around. So obviously taking them out is high on their agenda, because we tend not to notice the things as much because of the way that our systems are now, our biology, and the way we live today affects our sensitivity to what's on the land or what's in the land or above the land. That can be an issue. But there are occasions in which deals can be made, and that in itself can be very, very effective. There are ways that you can force it, but I prefer not to force my hand. I prefer let's see if we can meet an agreement here in the middle. Because I find when you tend to meet in the middle, then it's more beneficial for both. And they tend to like that a little bit better, instead of forcing the situation. Some of these places can be very, very problematic. And the likes of, there are areas that we can identify with our satellites where this activity tends to be a little heavy-handed, where you get pockets of phenomena which include UFOs, abductions, mutilations, a lot of paranormal, poltergeist, demon attacks, and I hate to use that term, demon attacks, you get a lot of those at night, but now we're starting to understand why those things are, why in particular that they're attacking us at night, why they wait on the person to attack them at that specific time, and it all comes down to our own biology. So 9 times out of 10, the incubus succubus attacks will happen to, and whenever I say incubus succubus, we're looking at the same entity. It's not male, female, it just switches back and forward, its appearance. And that attack will happen predominantly to women, more so than men. 9 times out of 10, it's more so to women. They wait until you enter the monthly cycle, because that's whenever you become, many women will become anemic. And when the iron count is low, that's when they strike. And it comes back to iron. Iron is our defense against what comes through the veil. So when you're dealing with a huge majority of this stuff, which includes, I have to say, grey aliens. I have seen the effect of iron with grey aliens. They are petrified because they can't shut you down. So that becomes a problem for them. And there's nothing worse than an afraid human, because we become violent. And their little skinny bones wouldn't stand up to any abuse. So the grey aliens have an effect with iron. The djinn don't like iron. They're petrified. Fairies, earth spirits don't like iron. And the old gods don't like iron. So we've got this common factor that passes through them all, as being something that repels them. When we go back and we look at the old manuscripts, we can see that to avoid the evil eye, for instance, you wore an iron pin on your collar. If you wanted to protect your children in the crib, you put an iron poker across the crib so that they wouldn't get at the children. if a farmer was working with his animals and he put them in a barn at night, he would use iron above the door to protect the animals so that they wouldn't become mutilated from the fairy. So all of this, you know, it's the association with iron and our long past association with iron. And Celts, of course, we have to look at the Celts here, because not only do we have that aspect of Halloween and the veil between getting thin between this other place and here, the Celts suffered from any other race around the planet. The Celts suffer from hemochromatosis, which is an overproduction of iron, the very thing that helps us fight against these things that come through. Now, ultimately, hemochromatosis, if left untreated, will be fatal. But that was something that we had to deal with. So when someone who is rich in iron is confronted with the veil opening, the doorway opening, he can stand with one foot on one side and one foot on the other, and the door can't be closed. They don't want that. So you know, it changes things around, and gives us the upper hand should we need to use it. There are certain things we need to understand, because it's okay to go into these things and say, okay, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to call this forward, I'm going to try and connect with this. But what do you do if it goes wrong? No one's talking about this.
One of the shows that I done recently over on the Kev Baker Show, I was lucky to come into contact with today's guest via Bill Bean. And I had no idea just the depth of the story that we were about to scratch the surface on over on the Kev Baker Show. And in the back of my mind, I always knew that Mercedes would be joining us here today. We're finally here. We finally got you on. And Mercedes, it's great to talk to you again.
Hi.
Talking about already, you have already brought sunshine. That's vibrance, that's energy.
Yes, They tell us lies that we're not good enough. They put thoughts in our minds that we should just give up. But I just put my gut suit on and look up.
Been an epic broadcast, Bill. There you go. There you go. These things are sent to try us, folks. And I tell you what, you couldn't get through this without a smile on your face and without being in warrior mode. Faith, strength, and courage. God bless.
Faith, strength.